Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm RFERL Enterprise Editor Carl Schreck, filling in for our regular host, Steve Gutterman, while he's away. I'm joined here today by Kirill Sukhotsky, Executive Editor of Current Time, the Russian language network led by RFERL in cooperation with VOA. Welcome, Kirill. It's good to have you here with us.
Hi, Carl.
We're going to talk prisoner swaps, parliament, and protests today. We're going to start with the reports in the Russian media that a prisoner swap between Ukraine and Russia is underway, or at least negotiations have been. RBK, the Russian newspaper, cited unidentified sources as saying a total of 66 prisoners might be exchanged, 33 from each side. The details still remain murky as of this morning, but Russian rights ombudswoman Tatiana Moskalkova has said that, quote, big and serious, end quote, work was underway with Kiev and that journalists should just be patient, that they will get all the information. Kirill, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has only been in office for a few months. If this exchange goes forward, what, if anything, could it tell us about prospects for his dealings with Moscow going forward, most notably as it concerns Ukraine's war with Russia-backed separatists in the east?
I think it's actually quite a personal matter for President Zelensky, because even in his first address, in his first speech immediately after he's been sworn in after, as Ukraine's president, he mentioned a need to talk to Russia about what happens in the east and in Crimea. However, he said the first thing and the first condition of this dialogue should be a return of prisoners. So I think to him, this is the first major step that he's willing to undertake. It's very interesting that if you zoom in on his pictures, he's actually wearing a bracelet, two bracelets, one with the logo of Ukrainian Navy and another bracelet with the names of all prisoners, of all the sailors, 24 sailors, Ukrainian sailors that have been captured and been kept in Russian prisons. So all our sources in Ukraine, and actually the conversation and the info, the drip, this drip of info is coming from Ukraine more than it goes from Moscow, because Ukrainians are more open to this and open to sharing information. All our sources in Kiev saying that the possible prisoner swap is in its final stages, and it may happen this Wednesday or Thursday. It's 66 people. It's 33 on either side. From what we are hearing, it will be all 24 sailors, and there are some other notable political prisoners like Pavel Grip, like Baluch, like Klik, all the people who have been captured. We don't know exactly who they are. We spoke to individual lawyers of some of those people, and they can say only about their defendants, and they said, yes, we are getting ready for the swap. It's very interesting that all the people that Russia is detaining, they brought them into one Moscow prison from wherever they were serving their sentences. So that gave us a hint that something is underway, and now their lawyers saying that yes, this is happening. The interesting thing is that on Thursday, new Ukraine Parliament begins its work, and it opens with the major address of President Zelensky to Parliament and to the Ukrainian people. He will have been in power just a couple of days, more than 100 days, 102, 103 days. And if that swap happens on Wednesday, a day before, it will be a major coup for President Zelensky. It will also be beneficial to Moscow because, on Sunday, there will be a big gathering of world leaders in Warsaw, marking the World War II anniversary. And that is exceptionally painful for President Putin because he was uninvited from that gathering. And President Zelensky will be there sharing a podium with Donald Trump, with other Western leaders. President Putin may send kind of this is a message. But we know that even since Zelensky came to power, He's already spoken over the phone with Russian President Vladimir Putin twice, once in July and once in August. And actually, the readout from those calls was, especially from the second call, was saying that we were talking about the activization of work to return of detained individuals. President Putin is often asked at the press conferences during his visits, what about the prisoner swap, what about the release of Ukrainian detainees, but he has never said about any timeline, any conditions. We're hearing more from Ukraine, but we still don't know exactly who the 33 on the Russian side are, and especially we don't know who the 33 on the Ukrainian side are. Because there have been mixed reports about how many Russians Ukraine is detaining and charging them with illegal activities in the east. So this is all a bit murky, but we may see quite a development and quite a scene. When you remember, if you remember, Carl, when Nadia Savchenko, the pilot detained in Russia, when she was returned by Russia back to Ukraine, she came back to Ukraine as a national hero. Her landing at the Borispol airport in Kiev was a scene for the ages. Everybody was live. You know, it was a scramble. It was incredible. Now, if we have 33 people coming back, then I think that will be quite a significant development, especially if it goes before the parliament. One notable thing to say is that apparently the most high-profile prisoner, Ukrainian prisoner in Russia, Oleg Sentsov, does not seem to be a part of that swap. So we are not hearing about him being here. And another side is what we're hearing is that another probably high-profile Russian prisoner in Ukraine, Russian journalist Kirill Vyshinsky, is also not a part of this swap. And there had been rumors before that Vyshinsky can be swapped for Sentsov. So it remains to be seen whether that's the case, but apparently those two high-profile figures are being kept away, possibly for negotiating a personal swap between them. And as Sentsov for Ukraine, Vyshinsky for Russia, they're both quite a big deal. If you open Russian state RIA Novosti website, Vyshinsky picture is right at the top. They're really boosting his profile. And of course, in Ukraine, if you walk even in central Kiev, the banners urging to release Oleg Sentsov are pretty much everywhere. He's a household name in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks, Kirill. I'm glad you brought up Parliament because they are set to convene on August 29th. And Zelensky's party, known as Servant, captured an absolute majority in elections in July, so they won't need to form a coalition. But none of the party's 254 lawmakers have ever sat in Parliament. That's a strategy Zelensky intentionally undertook to underscore his bid to inject fresh blood into Ukraine's political system. Kirill, can you tell us what are the key issues that these Zelensky's political neophytes in parliament will be facing as they convene this week? For one, there doesn't seem to be a real uniting ideology among them, so are there any guarantees they will vote in unison on a variety of issues? And second, what are the key bills they will be tackling? Zelensky said earlier that among the first to be debated would be one that could lift lawmakers' immunity from prosecution, and another outlining a procedure for the impeachment of a president.
I think Zelensky has a huge mandate from the Ukrainian people, and it's mandate not even personally to him. It's kind of he's a figurehead for all the disappointment that the Ukrainian public had in the establishment before, and that's why his party has a majority in parliament. None of the president, that's for the first time in new Ukrainian history. Ukraine has never had a parliament where one single party held a majority. This is for the first time ever. And the president also, with his significant powers, is in power. So now Zelensky has pretty much a free ride to do whatever he wants. That comes with a benefit. That means that there will be fewer stumbling blocks. However, that comes also with huge responsibility because he will not be able to blame anyone if something goes awry. So, and that's why, you know, I was in Kiev several times this year, and it's There is, you know, the ever-present talk in Ukraine, oh, will this lead to another revolution? Will this lead to another Maidan? And there are voices who are very optimistic and are saying that Zelensky will be able to clear the swamp, talking the Donald Trump vocabulary style. Or another set of voices will say he will be a big disappointment, he will not be able to do something, and it will lead to another revolution, because people who were disappointed in the establishment may become disappointed with him not being able to fight that establishment. So, but he has a lot of goodwill given to him by the voters. He had some drastic ideas what to do. You mentioned some lifting the, you know, all sorts of bills. But I think the main point is kind of to introduce reforms. Because what we've seen in Ukraine after the 2014 revolution is a bit like a deja vu. It's something that we've seen in 2004 during the first Orange Revolution, which enjoyed a lot of goodwill from the Ukrainian voters, as the Democratic Movement of 2014 did, and then it got, you know, absolutely, you know, it got themselves into a swamp. No, you know, lots of corruption and no reform agenda. First time it ended with Yanukovych coming back to power, and we know how that turned out. So now it's again, you know, many say that Poroshenko's presidency was good in terms of promoting something, but it didn't go far enough for the Ukrainian public. So the corruption is still there. Old figures from former establishment from the Yanukovych times are still there, and no reforms are coming. Healthcare reforms, pension reforms, whatever, criminal reform, justice reform. So I think that's what Zelensky, President Zelensky, and his party will have to do. One big question mark is actually his party, which was non-existent even several months ago. So that is a collection of people rather than organized movement. And that's rather kind of a collection of people loyal to Zelensky at this point. So it's very interesting. Our television crews visited a special camp in Western Ukraine just several weeks ago, where new MPs, new members of parliament were taught. They were literally at the university, at school, and they were taught how to do lawmaking, what to do in parliament, how to introduce bills, how to draft laws. You know, very, very interesting thing, because they're not lawmakers. Most of them have never been in politics. So it is a very interesting experiment. But I have to say that many people in Russia, including up there in the Kremlin, are envious, because this is something, you know, that Russia, even Russia, doesn't do. You know, in Russia, parliament just rubber stamps legislation, whatever comes from Putin's administration. And they have the president that ruled since the year 2000. And it was a very telling photo. Last Saturday, Ukraine celebrated the Independence Day. And there was a photo on Maidan where five Ukrainian presidents were present in one frame. They have their differences, but they were standing together to celebrate independence. And Vladimir Putin has pretty much no one to take photo with celebrating the presidency of Russia. He wouldn't be taking photos with Dmitry Medvedev, would he?
Probably not. All right, thank you, Kirill. I've got you here in the studio. Let's touch on one more subject quickly. We have likely protests coming up next weekend in Moscow. Opposition forces are likely to hit the streets to protest the decision by election officials to bar dozens of independent candidates from an upcoming municipal election there. So it looks like we could see a repeat of the recent violent crackdowns by riot police against protesters. Current Times has done a great job covering these protests. What do you expect to see this weekend, and what are the takeaways? Are we just going to see, you know, a few hundred arrests, and then everything proceeds as normal? I mean, do you see... I myself don't see a lot of momentum that that has been building on the recent protests, but let me know what you think.
It's kind of tricky. It's is the glass half empty or is it half full? It's kind of a we haven't expected that wave of protest in the summer, which is traditionally Russia's death season. So that tells you that there is a lot of disappointment in Russia and especially in Moscow. Many went as far as to say that Vladimir Putin lost Moscow. I don't think that's the case, but it's unusual. And this municipal election are absolutely unimportant. They elect an unimportant governing body that doesn't govern anything. So that was a pretext to get... And many people who come to the streets, it's went well beyond those elections. It's they're now venting their dissatisfaction about everything that goes on in Russia. And many of them are not from Moscow. It will be very interesting to see how it pans out. You may remember the protest of 2011-2012, where 100,000 of people went to the streets. And then the biggest problem was not that they went to the street. The biggest problem was that they left. And that's how the Kremlin changed the narrative. Then they invaded Crimea and Ukraine and whipped up, you know, the nationalist wave in Russia that actually turned protests to zero. And then we had this, our usual annual cycle of 3 to 4 big protests where people go in pretty much every 3 months, go into the streets of Moscow. Some of them get beaten up and then they go back to their normal lives. And that seemed not to change anything. I think the Kremlin was happy with this. What happens now is that suddenly the protest was sustained and that got Kremlin spooked. They did everything possible, all the tricks in their up their sleeve to stir up conflicts within the organizers, to put organizers into jails for quite substantial time. And they seem to partly succeed, to have succeeded, because we haven't seen protests over 2 previous weekends. However, now Navalny is back from jail. People are coming back from holidays. We do expect some sufficient turnout this Saturday. It will be a banned march. It will not be a sanctioned protest. Russian authorities, Moscow authorities recognize that now they can just quash this protest movement by not sanctioning anything, because many people say we will go only to sanctioned protests and not to unsanctioned one. So the Kremlin's wisdom is, oh, okay, let's not sanction anything. And they will, you know, fizzle out. We'll see, you know, I think from Saturday we will see how the momentum again building again. My point of view is that we expect quite a brutal crackdown, something that we saw in July and August, where up to 1,500 people may be arrested in Moscow alone. The only thing that now those protests become national. And we see protests in St. Petersburg, we see protests from Vladivostok to Kaliningrad. They're very small, mind you. So if those protests start to become more organized and more massive, then that could be a problem for the Kremlin. But I think everybody is now in the waiting game. What happens this weekend? What happens next weekend when the election are held? And what happens the week after the elections are held? And if there is kind of a post-election big protest? And what goes then? If the election is out of the picture, does that protest sustain the momentum as the Hong Kong protests do, for instance? So I think it's kind of a reckoning moment, and I think all eyes will be on the next couple of weeks on what happens to a protest and to protesters. The only thing is that protests in Moscow, unlike protests in Ukraine, are not very violent. Are not very forceful. And I remember I was in Kiev just on the eve of one of the protests in July, and people in Ukraine, they are incredulous. They say, okay, you go out to protest on Saturday, and then you don't protest Sunday, and then you come back home, and then you leave your life for the week, and then again you come out on Saturday. What do you want to achieve? Ukrainians don't do that. Ukrainians come to protest, and then they stay there, and that's how they got there. their two revolutions, most recently in 2014. We'll see what happens in Russia.
Well, we will certainly be watching. Thank you very much, Kirill. That is it for today, folks. That was RFERL's Week Ahead in Russia. Thank you all for tuning in.